Well, good morning. Come on. Welcome to Signal and Noise, or Noise 2. I'm Charlie Nesson. I have the honor of having been with the Berkman Center from its start, having been a passenger along a very interesting ride. For this particular convocation, we have special thanks to JOLT, the Journal of Law and Technology, which is co-sponsoring our event. We have special thanks as well to the Committee on Sports and Entertainment, also co-sponsoring our event, and to Gartner G2, which has been a friend and compatriot of the Berkman Center now for some years with respect to issues relating to digital media. I am hoping that this day is as exciting as it promises. This is a law school, and yet, in a sense, our strongest argument for the positions that we espouse, to which we've become quite passionately committed, are not so much legal arguments as the actualities of the creativity that we hope to defend. This conference is focused more on creativity than on law. We are interested in seeing new forms of creativity, in understanding its power, and appreciating the strength that that gives to legal argument for its protection. For those of you who are not lawyers, allow me to give you just the very briefest little run-through of copyright. I hesitate, but why not? First, think about law in general. What is its role? Quite typically, law comes into a field of play in the wake of military power. Soldiers take over some new jurisdiction. They occupy it. They can maintain their occupation for who knows how long, but if they can introduce law so that by some consent of the people within the jurisdiction, rules are followed, and they can transform their soldiers to police. And if they judge the power of their rulemaking accurately so that it conforms to what people within the jurisdiction feel is just, then the amount of power that's required by police with batons becomes less and less. So in some sense, the ideal of law is to produce forms of resolution that permit commerce and social interaction to flourish in a state of peace. Where copyright is concerned, there is advantage, in some sense, to the physical protections. If we have property and we lock it up, and the locks are good and strong, then you don't need much by way of police. You rely on your fences and your safe. Where intellectual property is concerned, it was the case in its origin that you didn't really need law to protect it. You had protection inherent in the fact that copies were very hard to make. If you wanted to make a copy, you needed a monk. And they were made one by one over long periods of time. Of course, the printing press changes that, introduces the possibility of multiple copy, introduces the idea of copyright law. Copyright law seen in some sense as monopoly, as control, If you come up to our period of history, you hit Thomas Jefferson. There he is right there. He is, in some sense, the author of our constitutional provision. He voiced a magnificent idea, as well then as it has been ever voiced since. Here's what he said: if nature has made any one thing less susceptible than all others of exclusive property, it is the action of the thinking power. I think of it as the creative power, called an idea, which an individual may exclusively possess as long as he keeps it to himself. But the moment it is divulged, it forces itself into the possession of everyone, and the receiver cannot dispossess himself of it. Its peculiar character, too, is that no one possesses the less because every other possesses the whole of it. He who receives an idea from me receives instruction himself without lessening mine, as he who lights his taper at mine receives light without darkening me. So here's the constitutional provision. And you will note in this provision that there's a balance that's struck. In a sense, this is a deal. Jefferson, I think, himself was someone who would just as soon have seen the law let ideas go completely free. But those forces who were monopolists of intellectual property wanted protection. And so this deal was struck. You'll see that it's a deal between copyright holders, on the one hand, and the public domain, on the other. The deal was, starting from the idea that freedom of thought and communication should lead to a vibrant domain in which everything is shared, and then compromising that vision only so much as was required to lead to incentive to create. The initial balance was in favor of public domain with a qualification for intellectual property. But as you know, that didn't last. From the beginning, you had people saying, no, no, not enough. And you had copyright expanding in numbers of different directions. Here's the duration of copyright, starting 14 plus and running up through history in a regular pattern, continuing up to our present. And with thanks to Sonny Bono, 1998, the Sonny Bono Copyright Extension Act. Words attributed to him through his wife that, yes, copyright for limited times, too bad we can't have copyright forever. Let's have copyright for forever minus a day. That was one huge avenue of extension, duration. A second avenue of extension involved substance, copyright extending to derivative works, an idea that was introduced and has now extended to an enormous reach. We have the three-note problem, which is delightfully confronting us as we go through our day-to-day. Third, there was, here, I should have said with duration, reference to Larry Lessig and to his client Eldred, who sought to do something about it and unfortunately lost 7-2 in the Supreme Court, but I think nonetheless sensitized the watching world to the problems of the gargantuan expansion of copyright and, in a sense, prepares the soil for the future that we are confronting ourselves. Another form of expansion of copyright was international. Ronald Reagan, in the 80s, forged a linkage between international trade and copyright, which has led to a form of imperialism with copyright, with American roots increasingly extending over the world. Interestingly, for our purposes, at the same time that this expansion of copyright is underway, we have the phenomenon of the internet taking root. The internet, the World Wide Web, Tim Berners-Lee, and here is John Perry Barlow, writing in 1994, observing that once ideas are no longer to be encapsulated in physical form, that is, once the move is made from atoms to bits, the property is out of the bottle. It can't be replaced. He appears here as the angel of death. That's the angel of death for the copyright holders. He's saying, in effect, he says explicitly, protecting copyright in the internet environment is like moving deck chairs on the Titanic as it's going down. It's like, forget about it. And following on from John Perry comes Sean Fanning, creating Napster, creating a realistic expression of exactly the argument that Barlow was making with Napster, and bringing us to the time that we exist in right now with a plethora of distribution means. Now, this is the second digital conference, Signal or Noise. Our first, back in 2000, was a totally wonderful event. Who was here who was, excellent, wonderful. Let me see, put them up again. I just really want to see, this is great. Great. It was a good event, wasn't it? Yeah, all right. So here we are back again. As I've said, our focus today is on the creativity side of things. We're looking for open formats, notwithstanding this wonderful setup we had here, where we have as much engagement and stimulation as possible. So please, feel free to come forward.